Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the podcast that tries in vain to podcast from a hotel room in Albany, New York, using a wireless connection. My name is Paul.
I'm Scott.
And we had to let go of Frank. I think everyone knew it was coming.
it's really been a shame to kind of leave him lingering. You know, I think he's known that the Turk has been coming for him for a while. And then just this latest news, I think, just puts it over the top. I mean, if you're going to let someone go, it has to be now, right?
Right. Yeah. We waited as long as we could. We had to, you know, inevitably make this decision. He tried. The effort was there, but we don't pay people for effort. We need the results. So so that's the bottom line. Actually, since I decided to do the intro, Scott, do you wish to announce the news?
So, Frank is
no longer with us. So
the news, because that Frank is no longer with us, is not because he's dead, which is what you might think.
Right. Yes, he has passed away.
He actually has welcomed a small human into his life, and he and his lovely wife are home with baby Latuka right now. I think we will let him reveal the name if he so chooses. But we'll call her, I think we can go with the gender.
Yeah.
We'll call her,
London Fletcher. I don't know.
London. Sierra.
Sierra Wood.
Sierra's kind of a girl's name, not to put too fine of a point on it. Sorry, Sierra.
Or we used to
adding insult to injury, literally.
We call CJ Spiller Carla Jean. So.
Carla Jean. Yeah. Carla Jean has joined the Maybe Next Year family along with little Henry earlier this year for me. And so we're slowly growing our listener base one baby at a time. That's the plan right now.
That's the plan. If we couldn't get the listeners through the traditional means, we were very clearly just going to start reproducing. You know, that was the idea, like get as many children who are thus obligated to listen to our podcast so we can lock in a room and say, absolutely, download this from iTunes because the spam bots can't do it all. You know, we need some help in order to do that. But
shout out to spam bots.
Yep. Yes. We love you, spam bots. You're our favorites. In all seriousness, congratulations to yes, Frank joining Scott Frank. Here as becoming a recent father. Frank will be back with us when he damn well pleases. So
yes.
He will still be our technician, meaning he will try to get around to posting this so I don't have to just YouTube it the old-fashioned way. And once he does that, you guys will be listening to this. But we do want to send a special shout-out to Frank and his wife, Scott Norwood, again, just using Bill's names now, on the birth of their child. So here's to you. Now, on to the business at hand. So, As Scott and I predicted, total blowout on Sunday.
I only predicted a 7-point win. Right. I believe you were a little more confident than that.
I believe I predicted a 3-touchdown win, which it was, in fact, a 3-touchdown win minus 20 points. So
minus 20 points. You meant 3 touchdowns scored during the game, right?
Right. Exactly. What
got
I
it.
Meant.
Yeah, exactly.
It was, Well, I will say this. What an entertaining second half of a game after a dud of a first half of the game. Just giving some quick initial impressions of mine and then let, you know, Scott run with it for a while before we chat about it in further detail. Really impressed with the defense for the amount of time they were on the field. They did give up some plays here and there, but you want to look at their what they've done the first, 4 or 5 weeks of the season, really just the New England game was the only dud. The statistics the Dolphins game are very deceiving because that was all Tannehill garbage time. I think the stats with the Giants game were deceiving because, it was largely one play. I don't know if you saw this, but the Giant who caught that 50-yard touchdown against the Bills, he'd stepped out of bounds at the 40-yard line.
I did not see that.
Yeah, I saw a screenshot of it just last week, so that was like, damn. But point being, defense has been really solid. I thought they did a good job, and I don't want to steal Scott's thunder to see what he might talk about here, but I just want to say, wow, Tyrod Taylor, that was some leadership there at the end. So hand this over to you for your impressions on this one, Scott.
I mean, we'll get to the Tyrod thing more later, obviously, like, you know, as I just put on Facebook, literally carrying the offense the last two drives, you know, kind of, obviously, you know, he did not get off on a great start. He had, the ball was a little inaccurate. I guess that would be acceptable, seeing as apparently he's been injured this whole time and hasn't been on the injury report. And again, we'll come back to that a little later. But I think, you know, this is, you know, this is kind of a reverse game from last week to a certain extent in that, you know, another game that we did not play well, but we did make the plays that we needed to win. So in that sense, I'm happy. I'm happy, obviously, with the win. I'm happy that we, you know, found the focus. You know, I think if you had looked at this game and you said, well, what if you added 10 more penalties and 100 yards of penalty yardage to the Bills? I'm not sure that we win, you know. Sean Charles Henderson made a very, very strong effort to just win the game for us. He was doing all he could because 2 third-down freaking penalties when you need a touchdown and in the fourth quarter, that's doing all you can as an offensive lineman to ruin this game. But, you know, one more or one on that run from Tyrod or, you know, 3 or 4 other critical plays. And that, you know, the margin was just that close. You know, as you said, you know, great job by the defense, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to overstate it. I think the defense is playing well.
The
Titans offense is terrible. Mm-hmm. They don't have anyone on their team who is good.
Were averaging 30 points a game going into this, but they played some terrible defenses. So
yeah, they're in the AFC South. I'm not really, you know, again, so they had 179 yards passing and 97 yards rushing. That's good that's partly our defense's fault.
I do that before breakfast, personally.
Exactly.
I do that, and I'm like, all right, time for that. Now that I have nearly 300 yards of offense, I'm going to have my oatmeal and raisins right now.
Exactly. So the defense obviously played well. You know, I'm glad that again, like, you know, the cornerbacks, it's really good to see them come along. Another great game from Gilmore, another pretty good game from ground from Ronald Darby. You know, obviously, Aaron Williams, we will talk about later. Mm-hmm. I'm really backselling the episode here. That's what this is called.
I think it's good. It's called foreshadowing.
Exactly.
For those of you who might be literature majors, which, for those of our, you know, listeners who don't have jobs, you're probably literature majors. That's my guess.
Exactly. And you're in Europe because you're on, you know, government paychecks and they'll do, you know, pay to do anything in Europe. Literature majors.
Way to alienate most of our listener base.
What
you do weekly. So
exactly.
You know,
why stop?
Why be inconsistent?
Yeah. And I think the only other thing is I will say is also special teams. You know, it didn't really come up with Carpenter in this game, though I was a little worried about one of those extra points. This definitely was a game where special teams, you know, was going to be a critical factor. I think we narrowly avoided some, you know, obviously the Titans, you know, they kind of got bailed out on the first kickoff with, you know, easily going off sides, I guess, on the kickoff, which is kind of like the, you know, short of offsides when you're on defense, like lining up in the neutral zone, like offsides on the kickoff is really like you practice it every week. You can probably get that timing down, but that one. And then, you know, obviously Denarius Moore, another great job bringing him in. I think that was really well thought through.
Yeah.
Clearly, Marcus Thigpen was a complete, you know, train wreck, and we needed to get him out. Denarius Moore was clearly someone who could bring in, provide some spark to the Tennessee special teams.
To be fair, yes, he did make one of the biggest plays of the game. but I think the Bills hired him in mind with the fact that he was going to do that for the Bills.
Exactly. It was a crucial mistake. We did not read that contract closely enough when we signed him. So I'm going to put that on Whaley. And I think that's going to be my only comment. Well, no, let me complain about the offensive line again, because the running game was terrible.
Yep.
And then now I'm done.
All right.
Most of my rest of criticism will be for the coaching staff. because again, like, we can get into the more of the injury stuff later, but just again, you know, the play calling, you know, some of it was on Tyrod. Some of it is on the offensive line. But again, I feel like I'm missing something in the play calling. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because we have McCoy out. And again, they're constricting the playbook with some of these junior guys in, or, you know, guys who are new to the team. Obviously, Booby's been around forever, so he shouldn't really be an issue. But, you know, Chris Hogan, or again, also been around forever.
Yeah,
but maybe
Marquise Goodwin, you know.
Marquise is working back into it, maybe. Yep. But again, it's a little concerning that, again, it seems like I've lost a little of the creativity in the play calling. But Those are my impressions. I don't know if you had anything else.
I don't disagree with anything you said, really. I think one thing, this kind of a discussion point we can talk about now, too. What do you think about McKelvin when he comes back? Is he the number three guy? Has Darby shown us enough to be the starter going forward?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to, obviously you don't want to Wally Pip anybody, but at the end of the day, Darby is really played better in his short time than McKelvin was playing over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's not that McKelvin was playing bad.
No, he was fine.
It was just that Darby is playing at I think Pro Football Focus has him rated as one of the top five cornerbacks in the league.
Yep.
Not just amongst rookies, but in the league.
Yeah, so he's blown us all away after we weren't alone. Most of us looked at him in the preseason and thought, oh, really, this is going to be an unpleasant beginning.
This is the plan.
With McKelvin out.
Yeah, exactly. But no, he's proved us all wrong. I mean, and, so I think, but yeah, I mean, McKelvin, I mean, I think he'd be a great nickel, say that much.
Yeah, and they could also look into, because of the depth at safety issues. I always think back in the day when they had Terrence McGee really emerge, not just as a returner, but a cornerback. They were like, all right, you're doing pretty well. And Troy Vincent, you're getting a little slower. Why don't you slide back to safety here, free safety, and then we'll bring in this guy, and then maybe McKelvin ends up as a safety. I don't know. There's a few different things they can do, but
Aaron Williams also was corner when we drafted him out of Texas. And then within the first season or two, he was back there at safety and has been playing very well.
Yep. And Jairus Byrd, people forget, was a safety at Oregon, a cornerback at Oregon. When he came to the NFL, they're like, you're not a cornerback anymore. You're a safety. And those things can be, those decisions can be made. Thinking about my thoughts on the game, I think about my thoughts a lot. That's one thing I should point out.
You also tweet them out regularly. So yes, that helps.
It does. It's like a diary, dear diary. Special teams, again, we brought up the penalty on the opening kickoff. We brought up the fumble. Colton Schmidt was outstanding again. I do want to give him a shout out, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done on special teams. Billy Cundiff got the axe this week after a bunch of subpar kickoffs. Maybe that was actually a vote of confidence for Dan Carpenter. We'll kind of assess that in the coming weeks, where if they thought Carpenter kicked well during the game and kicked well in practice, maybe his injuries are behind him. Maybe he's a permanent solution now. Duke Williams, I thought, did a good job filling in when he did briefly for Aaron Williams, who's, we'll get to later on why Duke Williams might have to be doing some more of that down the road. I really want to say that, the D, after again struggling with that quick throw strategy early in the game, really did step up and play much better in the second half of the game. The offense, I don't think, really turned around until Tyrod just said, screw you guys, I'll do it myself. And then all of a sudden, Chris Hogan starts emerging. Then Marquise Goodwin starts making good catches. Then Robert Woods lays on some phenomenal blocks. And I called out all three of those guys in the first half and saying, what are you going to do to show you shouldn't be cut at halftime? And lo and behold, after the second half. And lo and behold, they all did emerge in the second half and played much better. I think the one thing we can get on Tyrod for before we go on a Tyrod praise fest, which I was planning to do at some point, is why does it take the desperation scenario for him to get it turned on like that? It was like they were down three, and then we kind of lollygagged through the game. And then after Tennessee scored to make it a 10-point game, Tyrod's like, all right, I'll get this done now. And at some point that can be too little too late, like it was in the Patriots game. So you want to see him emerge a little more quickly in this game. Jerry Hughes, again, for the money you're getting, Jerry, expecting a little bit more out of you on that front. So, we'll see how that goes. And again, I concur. I couldn't agree with you more on the offensive line. They just really struggled again. Chantrell Henderson is, in my mind, proven to be one of the bottom tackles in the league. I don't think John Miller is much better at guard. I think Eric Wood is middling and replaceable, to be honest with you. And I hate to say that because
playing like it again. Like 2 or 3 years ago, he was someone who was promising and was looking like he could be like a really good center. And now it's like on his good days, he's marginally above average, but his average day is average to below average for a center, for someone who is supposed to be the cornerstone of the line coming.
Yep, one of the highest paid players. I mentioned as I looked through my tweets on Sunday, his cap number 6.65 million this year, higher than all but Mario, Kyle, and Marcel. Like that's what you're paying the guy for. You're getting a lot of value right now out of Ronald Darby, Carlos Williams, Tyrod Taylor, and thank God you're getting value out of them, because you know he's not Eric's not doing what he needs. He's being paid to do. Same thing. If I'm not doing my job, call me out for it. You know, he knows he's got to step up, and hopefully his teammates are holding him accountable. But I was, you know, all the negatives aside, they did emerge victorious at the end. We've talked about before, like, oh, you know, this was kind of a moral victory because this. No, there was no moral victory. It was just a win. Well, Bills didn't even necessarily deserve to win. But Tyrod made the big plays and he needed to. That third and 23 scramble, dear Lord. I mean, that was like beyond Flutie-ish right there to me. He was going to do whatever, and that might have complicated his injury more and ended up hurting the team in the long run. But that's what a competitor does. That's what a leader does. That's what a winner does. Before the Titans' last drive, my dad and I were talking, and I said to him, like, you know, the best thing for here would be is to turn around the first play, and then we can relax. And what happens? Gilmore steps up, sees the ball in the air, jumps in front of the receiver, makes the pick, and all of a sudden, the Bills have an easy kneel down win there at the end. So, you know, all in all, it was a poor game. They didn't play well, but I would rather be talking about a poor game they didn't play well and emerged with a victory. And I think that's what we have to look at as the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, and getting to Taylor, I mean, yeah, I mean, you would remember this better than I would. I'm trying to think of a time when a quarterback for the Bills kind of performed like that in the clutch, because I mean, we've had some, you know, EJ obviously had, you know, last year, the year before, had the game against Carolina where he, you know, brought us down and scored, you know, with less than 3 minutes. And we've had other, you know, JP, yeah, had a game or two
fits
like
against
that.
Against Oakland and fits against the Patriots on back-to-back weeks in early, you know, 2011 had those games.
Exactly. But I'm trying to think of a guy who scored two late, you know, we needed two touchdowns on basically the next two drives in the fourth quarter, and he did it. And I think you raise an interesting point about the first half versus the second half. You know, part of me wonders, again, how much of it is the play calling and how much of it is coaching conservative in terms of we're going to rely on the run game and the defense to keep us in the game. And once it's clear that at this point we're going to lose unless we change our strategy. So Tyrod, now, you know, the governor's off, you know, just try and win the game for us. That's when suddenly he becomes a little more dynamic, a little more willing to take risks, throw it down the field. You know, I think, you know, again, when they're throwing these passes, these, you know, these outs on the sideline, these corner routes, you know, the fades, a lot of those, I feel like I don't see as many of them in the first half. Now, maybe some of it, again, is maybe Tyrod's not seeing it as well. We know that he is new to the system to a certain extent and that he needs probably some time to get used to NFL game speed. But at the same time, it does seem like he doesn't have any problem with it in the second half. So part of me thinks that it might be some sort of coaching, play calling, conservatism, yep, that's seeping through or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and we'll see if Roman makes that adjustment next week, because let's face it, they can't. I don't think falling behind against the Bengals is really an option.
No, they can't pussyfoot around on Sunday. They need to go at this like they are already behind 14 points in the first half, because Cincinnati, I mean, again, like, I don't think they're like a great all-time team or, you know, definitely like a Super Bowl contender, but they're playing really well right now, and yeah, they have a lot of weapons and they're good on defense. We are not going to be able to just kind of wake up and decide in the second half that, oh, we're going to try and score now, because they are not going to be rolled over easily.
So. Now, I thought they'd played well the first 4 weeks, just from the highlights I'd seen in the way I'd looked at, you know, some of the things I looked into, but they caught my attention beating Seattle. And not only that, coming down from behind.
Coming back from behind against Seattle. Yeah. Which is you're playing right into Seattle's hands when you're trying to do that. And I mean, they're on home, so I guess that helped Cincinnati a little bit, but still, like, you gotta, you know, take it to the champs to beat them, and they beat them, no doubt about it. So
yeah, so just it was an excellent second half to watch. I was very enthused by it. The bottom line is the team's 3-2. It's they'd be in the playoffs again if the season ended today. And yeah, I said the P word because the way I look at it, you know, when you're talking about playoffs in week 5, you're not talking about them seriously. And if you are, that's a problem. You know, you've got 11 weeks.
You've got other problems. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, the Bills could realistically finish 3-13. So they could also realistically finish 14-2. even though neither of those things are likely to happen. But it's important because this AFC has started the season with a lot of mediocrity. You know, I watched Pittsburgh, San Diego, and thought, dear Lord, one of these teams is going to be 3-2 at the end of this game. How does that happen? You know, but there's some opportunity. And I think they've got some key games coming up and potentially key games without Mr. Taylor, which we'll discuss right after the three stars of the game.
Yes, we'll do three stars now. Your honorable mention and someone who maybe should have gone on it now. I struggle with this because when you give it to a punter, it's kind of like, again, he's only on the field for 7 plays a game. So it has to be really pretty freaking good for him to make it onto the three stars list, which is why he's honorable mention this week. Colton Schmidt, you know, 7 punts, you know, averaged more than 50.1 or so yards per punt. A number, you know, at least one in the 20, a long of 65. Consistently in that first half, you know, one punt goes out of bounds at the Titans 40-yard line instead of the Titans 20-yard line, and the Bills defense is putting in a bad position. Maybe the Titans squeeze out another field goal, and that's the difference in the game.
Oh yeah, I there's something in baseball which you're probably aware of too, called Fangraphs, which talks about how a game can spin. Like his punts alone, if you had a Fangraphs chart, swung momentum in all those, like, where it actually allowed the Bills defense to give up a first down or two to the Titans in some instances and not give up points, even though the Bills offense was doing nothing resembling moving the ball.
Yeah.
And so when Scott's given an honorable mention to a punter, I couldn't agree with that more, because the things he did on that field, even though punting is kind of scoffed at, those had an impact on the end result of the game.
Yeah, and again, you know, part of it's the 7 plays a game thing. The other thing is, if he's doing this in like November, December, when the weather's crappy out, then that moves him into the three stars. And he's perfectly capable of doing it, but I just don't want to burn his three star. I don't want,
Let's not get too high on himself. He's got a little bit more to prove. He's a second-year punter, you know, had some good games. And has
exactly.
A good game.
I know he's I know he listens to the podcast. His head's probably getting full of just getting on the honorable mention list. So, Colton, keep working at it, and we'll talk about, you know, a third star, you know, later in the season. Big game against Cincinnati on the Sunday. I need you to pin him down in that 5, all right?
Yeah.
All right. So your third star is going to be Jarrell Casey. Again, you know, I think that was another thing. I need to spend more time scouting the defense of the teams we're playing, because I'm not aware of people who are good on other teams. Jarrell Casey is good. I think he had a pretty good game. You know, one of the guys who was abusing our offensive line, he had 6 total six tackles, 1.5 sacks, and a tackle for loss. You know, he's a big dude, and he clearly was giving us problems in the pass game and in the run game. And I think it's kind of emblematic of a Titans defense that's not, you know, I don't think there's a ton of stars, but clearly they had some guys who were pretty decent. Though again, we were obviously, you know, injured too. So that's part of it. But I think that's worth a third star.
Yep.
Second star I give to Tyrod Taylor. Again, you know, not a perfect game from him. But if you want to look at the guy who, again, he was responsible for roughly 80%, 90% of the yards, you know, between passing and running. He was the only one on offense who did anything. Would have been a very sad day if, you know, Tyrod, you know, got injured early on in the game. Obviously, EJ will find out where he is soon, but Tyrod definitely gets, I think, a second star at least for this. You know, first star would have been he needed to play a little better in the first
for the full game. Yeah, I agree with that too, because we were talking about when was the last time Bill's quarterback did that. I think the way it stands out from the EJ game or some of Fitzpatrick's games are he really just took the bull by the horns and did it himself. You know, Shontrell Henderson takes 2 dumb penalties. The Bills are inside their 5 with a 3rd and 23 or whatever in that situation. If you're to tell me they were to score a touchdown because he was going to convert that with his legs, throw a perfect bomb to Chris Hogan, catch a ball from Chris Hogan, and then throw a touchdown pass to Chris Hogan on the subsequent plays, I would have just assumed you were snorting something really good. But he just, I can't recall Fitzpatrick or Manuel just single-handedly being like, chill out, guys, I got this. And that was what was so impressive to see. But I agree with your logic. You know, you can't just hand a guy a first star who for 2.5 quarters was as bad as anyone else on offense.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely kind of a, I would say I'm trying to find out the win percentage here, like what the difference was. But I think it was, Anyway, I'll fiddle with it later if I can find it. I will. But your first star is Marcell Dareus, leading the Bills defense. Again, not a huge presence on the stat sheet per se. You know, five tackles, you know, no official sacks. He did have, you know, two QB hits, I think, if you look at it correctly. But at the same time, if you look at the Pro Football Focus grades, if you look at Joe Buscaglia's grades, he grades out very highly. I think you could see him showing up in the run game and in the pass game, collapsing the pocket. Obviously, with Marcus Mariota, you need to come at him with a controlled rush. You can't have a bunch of guys flying off the edges. Mario did get to him when Mariota didn't see him coming. That was a pretty awesome hit.
Yes,
but at the same time, I think Marcell, I think, was the whole game was controlling that middle and putting Mariota into those positions where it wasn't his choice to run outside. He had to run outside because he was just getting pressure up the middle. So again, you know, first star for, you know, Marcell and really the whole team defense. Again, keeping the team in it when the offense was literally doing basically nothing the entire time.
Yeah, so. He was the term that runs through my mind is disruptive force. Like, this was a guy who just the whole game, he seemed to be in the middle of things, both literally and figuratively. And that's a huge swing. You can't easily block him with any number of people. And then if you let him go, then you're going to see Kyle Williams, who I also want to call out for chasing down Mariota to keep him from getting a first down. It was just a fabulous play. And I called that out during the game. Like, that was something else where it was, I think it was like a 3rd and 9 or something. Mariota appeared to be able to have the first. And Kyle Williams literally ran him down to force him out of bounds a yard or two short and lead to a punt. But this isn't about Kyle for once. This is about Marcell. And unlike Jerry, who I think needs to step up his game a little bit based on the contract the team handed him, I think Marcell has done that. He was already playing at a Pro Bowl level. Now I think he's showing like, oh, they gave Sue this amount of money in Miami. This is what I'm going to do with the money you give me. And he is, you see what a difference maker he is when he is on the.
To be fair, we could probably put like a Thanksgiving turkey out there at defensive tackle. he would be playing better than Sue right now, honestly. So
right, there are, even if it were like an overcooked turkey, it possibly would be playing better than Sue. And I always like to call out when some of our listeners have, you know, observations. I also want to note that we were in the under on penalties from what we set the bar at, which was 12. So good job, discipline-wise, after really blowing it on the first play of the game. I'm like, not this crap again. And then they went about 2.5 quarters from there without committing a penalty. But as you mentioned, Scott, and our listener, Jesmyn Jester, agrees with you, the second half is where Greg Roman needs to start to show what he is being paid for. That was really a perfect observation. You know, going through some of the other observations that you know, listeners had, you know, it's James Borb noted, it seems super obvious that the run isn't working, yet we seem to keep trying. You know, the offense has struggled with really every aspect for a while, so I wanted to point that out. And you know, as Tom pointed out, he said, how is this game actually still winnable? And we were having that exchange during the third quarter. And yet that's what it was winnable. The Bills did what they did and hung with an inferior team long enough to go out and then, you know, be the team that wins in the end of the game. So I don't have any other thoughts on this game. Are we ready to move on to the topic we don't really want to talk about, but yeah, we absolutely need to, because it's the news of the day.
I think we kind of have to. Yeah.
I think we do as well. I'm taking a legitimate sigh. Okay. EJ Manuel, potential Bills starting quarterback for the next 2 weeks. That is the word at present. Again, we are recording this Wednesday night. The news will be very fluid, I am sure.
And it's fluid already. I mean, if you look at the practice report from today, it says that, you know, it says Tyrod was limited. You know, it's kind of like if he was going to be out, you know, you would expect that he would be resting. He would not be practicing at all. All right. So I'm, you know, Frank, Paul, why don't you just go ahead and say what you were going to say, but we'll keep this in mind that obviously things are fluid, as you said.
Right. It's you might know more by the time you listen to this podcast as well. We might know more too. But as of right now, you know, one thing we'll know for sure is Tyrod, if he plays, will not be healthy. He cannot possibly continue to do some of the amazing things he's done to win games if he's not healthy. His running will suffer, his mechanics will suffer, all that will suffer. And so we are very much looking at the prospect of seeing EJ Manuel in a game against the Bengals. Now, we all talked that and agreed that by the end of the preseason, we were comfortable with him being the backup quarterback, that he'd done enough to show that he has a spot on the roster. And I'm not sure if it's more of a condemnation of whether or not I really believe that, that I'm nervous about it, or whether it's like when I see Tyra, I'm like, oh, crap, this is the first quarterback I have seen in more than 10 years where I'm like, yep, this is the guy I expect to be a long-term answer for a while. But for those reasons, I'm a little nervous about the prospect of not just the Bengals game, potentially even the Jacksonville game without Tyrod back there.
Oh, see, okay, so that's interesting because for me, like, obviously, like, there's the strategic level problem of Tyrod Taylor being potentially, you know, we'll say it, like, potentially the Bills' savior at quarterback, the guy we have been hoping will lead us out of the desert of quarterback ineptitude, our Moses, to lead us to the promised land of, you know, with the Packers and the Patriots and, you know, Seattle at this point of teams right. that have found their quarterback.
If he needs us to the playoffs, I think he is contractually obligated to change his name to Moses Taylor. So I think that's in there.
You know, that is the strategic level kind of nightmare, terrifying scenario that we've somehow botched the one guy who is going to get us there. Speaking about the more tactical problem of what do we do on Sunday, you know, I am concerned about Tyrod. I mean, I would have been concerned about the game even with Tyrod in because I think Cincinnati is a good team. I am definitely concerned about EJ. I agree with you. I was fine with EJ as the backup, but I also know EJ's skill sets. You know, we've seen EJ's skill sets. He looked better. You know, he looked as good in the preseason as anybody as he's ever looked, maybe in any game to a certain extent, for at least whole games or for as much as he was doing it. You know, he was aggressive. He was throwing the ball down the field, making good reads, making good decisions. You know, getting rid of the ball on time. You know, had some occasional problems with accuracy, but again, you know, if he was perfectly accurate, he wouldn't be on the bench. He would be, you know, a starting quarterback somewhere in the league. So that is definitely a concern for me on Sunday because the Bengals are a good team. And because I think it's going to be tough enough with, you know, our, you know, one-armed, one-legged offense, you know, getting out there with a healthy Tyrod Taylor, let alone now with, you know, potentially EJ coming in. The Jacksonville game is exactly the type of game where I'd be much more comfortable with EJ coming in. And I think Jacksonville is a better team this year, but I still think that they're not a good team. And I think that the Bills should be able to handle them in London with EJ at quarterback. Again, like
they should. And I would say, well, and we'll get into this later too, I think LeSean and Sammy will play a role in how well that goes too. But
obviously. And that's kind of a key thing when we get to our predictions. It's gonna be a lot dependent on those kind of injury things. But you know, Jacksonville's still 1-4. You know, they're not a great team. I think the defense will do a good enough job of putting EJ in a position to win. And in the Jacksonville game, this Cincinnati game is one where it's obviously where I think it's much more clear that we need all hands on deck. But at the same time, Rodak did some really good stuff, you know, putting together this, you know, this is not the first time that we've had people get injured in the game and then keep getting running out there and then they're out for multiple games afterwards.
Yeah. Look at Williams. I mean, he sat out, Aaron Williams sat out a couple series and then came back and played 60 plays. And we're like, all right, you know, he's a nagging injury. Wonder if he'll deal with it for a while. Oh, by the way, out for, you know, at least through, you know, 12 games or so, you know, bam.
You go to Carlos Williams, who I believe had a concussion, but still was in the game, in the Giants game. Yeah. After that, and then you also go to LeSean McCoy, someone who we were kind of like, well, he's right on the edge of being able to go or not. Let's throw him out there for Miami. Well, he gets 11 cards for 16 carries, 11 carries for 16 yards. Yeah, he's a little dinged up. Oh, actually, he has a hamstring tear, and he should really be out for like 2 to 3 weeks. So
yeah,
I have very little confidence that our coaching staff knows how to deal with injuries, which is kind of terrifying. Because I feel like that's something that's kind of elementary. I understand, like, it's, you know, sometimes medicine is not a perfect science, but at the same time, you know, they're getting paid a ton of money, and some of these things are fairly consistent. You know, he has a sprained MCL or he doesn't. he has a tear in his hamstring or he doesn't. And I guess, maybe I'm dumb, but it seems like those are fairly obvious things that someone needs to be making the call here that these people can't go into the game.
Right. And regardless of our own intelligence on these matters, I think that's a concern for me. It's like, why, you know, if we'd sat McCoy a few weeks back, are we without him for the weeks that followed? You know, we played him in the Miami game and that seemed to aggravate the injury. He would probably be back for sure this week if that weren't what was going on. And the reason I know I'm concerned about Tyrod too, and really like him, is in the past, you know, it's like, oh, EJ's out, Thad Lewis is in, you know, yeah. Thad Lewis is out. In our discussion we had at a bar in Buffalo, the three of us, when you guys visiting, like, I was looking at my phone, I'm like, so Thad Lewis is out this week, so it's Jeff Toole, right? Meh. Like, what was the difference, really, from one to the other? You know, rookie EJ Manuel, wash up Thad Lewis, or never will be Jeff Toole. The one thing that encourages me about that is when we played the Chiefs that game, the Bills played the Chiefs, the Bills went into that game with the subpar record, and the Chiefs were 9-0, and it was only through luck, really, that the Chiefs ended up winning that game.
Some terrible Jeff Toole decisions that even right. One of them might have turned the game around.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think that encourages me. I think the Bills are more talented now than they were then, and that they can win if they have. I really hope that McCoy and Sammy get back. I think that's going to be a huge difference if they can. But I will say this. If Tyrod needs 2 or 3 weeks, and by the way, report from BuffaloBills.com 1 minute ago, Tyrod Taylor's plan is to play on Sunday. So that's his plan. You know, whether or not that happens, we'll have to see.
See, again, like, that's the thing. Like, I really hope that, you know, Rex has been around these teams before. These are big macho guys. Excuse me, I'm drinking beers.
That's okay.
I've been drinking pretty steadily since I heard about the Tyrod Taylor news. So the fact
you've
only heard one
person. This is how you know
so
it's Scott and I who ran this podcast, because that's going to stay in. Like, we're not going to bother to edit that out. You know, we'll just go with that.
And so what I was going to say was that, you know, Tyrod wants to go out there. Tyrod thinks he's the best guy for this team, and that even if he's not 100%, he's a guy who can get it done. But at the same time, he's not in charge of that. That's not his job. He is not capable of thinking. He is biased about his own ability. You need someone who is unbiased, preferably someone on the medical staff, who can make a decision about whether or not he is at risk to himself or the future of the franchise if he goes out there and gets killed on Sunday. Because, again, you want to go back to that strategic question I was talking about a while ago. If Tyrod goes out there and gets decapitated by Geno Atkins on Sunday because he's got a sprained MCL and can't move that well, that's something that someone needs to – that's an adult decision.
Yes.
Not that Tyrod's not a man and capable of doing his own decisions, but he is so biased that he cannot be allowed to do that. So this is why someone needs to step in and say, Tyrod, you're hurt. I know you want to be in there, but golly gee, we really need you for the Jets and the Patriots in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep. And I couldn't agree more. And you live in a city where this is a huge deal. How many, and we are not fans of the Washington football team, but I think we all agreed after the first year, like, yeah, good thing for, Shanahan that Robert Griffin III is the real deal, which we all assumed he was, but he played injured and they constantly exposed him to that. And he is a shell of what he was as a rookie. I don't want to see the same thing happen to Tyrod.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrod, again, you know, he doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires, but, you know, he's not 22. He is 26. You know, he's got, you know, obviously quarterbacks can play a long time in this league, but he's not going to play like he did on Sunday for a long time in this league. Hopefully he's good in the future about, you know, keeping himself, not taking the big hits, all that kind of stuff. You can't do much about a horse collar tackle that's clearly illegal and they called, but, you know, that's just a risk of playing football. But anyway, it's concerning to say the least. Again, I don't think EJ will play necessarily bad on Sunday. It's just, I mean, Sammy Watkins was saying today that, you know, he thinks EJ is going to have a monster game. You know, I think this game he's going to come in and light it up just because he had the time to sit and watch Tyrod make plays. He's going to go out there, throw a lot of passes, make the right corrections at the line, and he'll be good. I think that's true. I think EJ can do that. But at the same time, he still – I don't trust him as much as I do Tyrod at this point.
Yep, and we'll get into the details on the game during the game preview. I think we've probably we've never exhausted the Tyrod Taylor injured topic, because we're certainly going to bring it up in future podcasts, probably as soon as next week. We touched on the other injuries. We should go into those a little bit more. And the one we've touched on the least is the Aaron Williams one. I think Aaron Williams really stepped up as a player about two seasons ago when they moved him to safety. I was happy they gave him the new contract to get him in that role permanently. I think he's played generally well, save for being a hothead too many times when he is back there. But his injury concerns me more for two reasons. One, the length of it, you know, that we're looking at 7 games he's going to miss, and also the depth behind him. And this is, you know, you're going to have Bakari Rambo or Duke Williams in there as the next men up. And while they have shown flashes at times, I am not necessarily comfortable with those as next men up. Do you think, and again, not just the Bengals this coming week, do you think this is something teams are going to exploit down the road? Is that they're going to have a weak link at free safety potentially on defense?
I mean, you have to, right? I mean, it's anytime a guy gets injured in the league, you know about it and you pick on his replacement until they prove you otherwise. I think, you know, I think Duke is someone who's a big hitter. I don't recall him being particularly great in coverage. And when you have someone like Tyler Eifert, who's been destroying...
And Bakari Rambo is a big hitter of Ronald Darby. Does it
exactly. Also a big hitter, but not usually to hopefully more towards the opposition in the future.
Yes.
But again, we'll talk about the matchups later. But Tyler Eifert, you want Aaron Williams on the field against him, someone who's athletic enough to stay with a good tight end and who can match up physically with him. I think Duke can match up physically with him. I just don't think he's nearly as skilled or as fluid in coverage. And that's something that's going to be a problem, because Dalton's been killing it to A.J. Green, obviously, but Eifert's had a big game this year. And, you know, obviously, Aaron, you know, it's, again, we already talked about, obviously, it's concerning that the coaching staff was not, you know, somehow, I would say there's a very small chance that he dinged himself in a specific way in which he is, you know, okay, he was okay to keep playing on Sunday, but now suddenly needs 8 weeks off. I'm almost certain he should never have been playing Sunday and really needed 8 weeks off to begin with, and no one would have thought never no mind about it, because Christ, he almost got killed on the field. So, you know, Aaron, get better. Coaching staff, pull your heads out of your asses. There.
Yeah. Same theme there. Would he be out this length of time if the coaching staff had made a tougher decision on game day on Sunday? I don't know if he would be. The other two injuries we want to definitely discuss, and again, we talked about these a little bit more when talking about Tyrod, LeSean, Sammy, and Carlos. Now, word came out again that you know, LeSean and Sammy are both looking good for this week. Sammy, I think we expected that a bit, in that he was an emergency receiver on Sunday, said he would play if there was an injury to another receiver. There was not. He got to rest. The Bills won. No harm, no foul. LeSean did say he would recover quicker than the 3 to 4 week time frame. He's missed 2 full games and most of another. I am hopeful that he is indeed back. Carlos, I have not heard much on that. You know, he might have come up in Rex Ryan's report today.
Rex Ryan specifically said, "I don't know the phases of the concussion protocol. All I know is I'm supposed to say he's in the protocol and he's out of it when he's out of it," or something to that effect, which is, Rex does not seem to be someone who's oriented on the details of the concussion protocol or apparently his team's injuries, which is a little concerning, but ultimately he's right. Carlos is in the protocol, and when he's out of it, he's out of it. Obviously, like, at some point he needs to start practicing again, because if you're not practicing, you're not playing. And unless it's the playoffs or something, and he has not been practicing so far this week. So really Thursday, we kind of need him to get out there. Otherwise, it could be relying a lot on LeSean and Booby and Boom and the rest of the cast of characters at running back.
Yes, all of whom have great nicknames, but are subpar producers generally. So this, you know, this, I agree. I like to see that, you know, we'll get Carlos through the protocol. We'll see how he's doing. Not Scott and I personally, but the team's doctors will do so.
maybe we'll have him on the podcast next week if he
right. We will. Like, we had, which one of us had Tyrod again?
Frank had Tyrod.
Frank had Tyrod. Yeah,
because I remember his big selling. Well, when Tyrod was on the podcast in Frank's voice, his big selling point was, "I'm not EJ Manuel or Matt Castle,"
right?
Which at the time was all we really needed. but the fact that he's actually a good quarterback was kind of a revelation to all of us here in Buffalo Bills fandom land. So
Yeah, it certainly was, and it's great. And now, of course, we're paying the price of why can't we have nice things?
Yes.
Let's move on to the some of the listener comments, questions. We posted this late, so we might not have any. If you have some, we'll do our best to answer them on Facebook and Twitter.
We do not have any at this moment. Our post reached 5 people, so none of those 5 people have commented. Oh, well.
Well, screw those 5 people. Yeah. That's what I say. Looking at, and again, listener questions, we don't really have too many specific questions even on Twitter. I do want to say thanks to Jasmine Jester, who said some great things about our podcast and who had some great observations on the game as well. He doesn't give himself enough credit for knowing the game. He said he's only been following it 3 seasons, but his tweets during the game when we talk back and forth are really on the level. You know, he knows what he's talking about. So kudos to him. So again, rather than giving questions, because we don't really have too many this week or any as I'm scrolling through. thanks to James Borum for his comments and questions. He had some great ones as well. Good interacting with him. Always good interacting with Tom. Shapes. That's you're great. You have a great photo as well. Appreciate your favorites and retweets. Brian, as always, involved. Brian Punt as well, of course, always involved. So,
Paul, I actually forgot something that we forgot on the agenda.
Oh man, I skipped an agenda item here.
I don't know if it was on the. I don't think it was on the agenda.
Okay,
but it was something that we should talk about, and that is congrats to Paul. Winner of the Survivor pool. Congratulations, sir.
I didn't even know. I knew I didn't know which team you'd picked, so I wasn't sure.
I picked a team that lost by 1 point. I believe I was chasing Chicago. I have been doing pretty good in chasing Chicago, and they finally beat Kansas City 18-17. Figured Kansas City, everyone's been in love with this whole time. Like, oh yeah, Travis Kelce, they'll beat Chicago, no problem. And that worked out like a pile.
I don't believe I would have made that same pick. I hedged on the pick for a while, and I looked at how the Giants were trending. I looked at how the 49ers are trending and thought, well, even I think the Giants aren't as good as they played against the Bills, and the 49ers aren't as bad as they played, but it's in New York, and I think the Giants should win this game by a touchdown or so. But of course, then it goes down to the last second, and I actually watched the Sunday night game to see Eli bring that back. And so, that was good to see. I'll keep playing if it's still set up.
We will be resetting it shortly, so everyone will be back in it. And feel free to make your picks Thursday. And I will also put that on the Facebook page because people will probably forget that that's a thing.
Right. That's a thing. We're moving right along here. We're trending well. So we're going to move right on to this day in Bills history. And I will say this day in Bills history is terrible because I went back 30 years, and of the 4 times, there are 5 times that the Bills were October 14th, which is today's date, fell on a Sunday. 3 of those times, they had the frickin' bye week. 3 of those. One of them was a Monday night game, so they played on the 15th. Uh-huh. And of course, I had one game to choose from from the last 30 years. I did think about cheating and doing October 13th because this would have been the loss to the Bengals 2 years ago on October 13th. But we will go with the game with the Bills playing at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. For those of you who may remember this game, there was a Chris Kelce safety of Kevin Kolb. There were 45 interceptions by Jairus Byrd. Oh, I'm sorry, that was 2. 2 interceptions by Jairus Byrd, including what would end up being the one that would turn the game. There was a 61-yard field goal by Jay Feely, not the quarterback, in the fourth quarter to get Arizona to tie this game.
Not A.J. Feely.
Right, not A.J. Feely, just plain Jay Feely. Plain Jay Feely as opposed to A.J. Feely. There was I remember watching this game. It was neither team could stop the run. The Cardinals rushed for 182 yards. The Bills rushed for 165 yards. So 347 yards in rushing alone, made up for by the fact that neither team could pass, combined for 291 yard passings, which together would be a pretty decent day. But as a combined team, not good. John Skelton came in after Kevin Cobb got hurt. Sign of things to come for the Bills. Went 2 of 10 for 45 yards. Ryan Fitzpatrick, a Fitzpatrick-y day. 18 of 32, 4.8 yards a throw. Sacked twice. He threw one interception. The other was thrown by Brad Smith on his one pass. Brad Smith, two passes in his Bills career, both intercepted. But the bottom line is at the end, Jairus Byrd made a big interception in overtime, set up a chip shot Ryan Lindell 25-yard field goal. The Bills come out of Sun Devil Stadium with a big 19-16 win.
Not Sun Devil Stadium.
Yes, sorry. Yes, sorry. University of Phoenix Stadium. Wow. Botched it already.
University of Phoenix is going to come looking for you, Paul.
Yep.
You were in trouble, buddy.
Yep. Sorry, University of Phoenix Online. Oh, no. I'm kidding. So the Bills improved to 3-3 with this game. We are hoping that 3-3 is not the record after this Sunday's game. Now, let's see. For the trivia question, this one is a tough one because we don't go back very far in this game. So I'm not even going with the Bills player. We're going to make the trivia question revolve around a player for the team known as the Arizona Cardinals. Now, because we are in the Halloween season here, and I don't know if that's widely celebrated in Europe. I have seen, I don't want to go into this right now. But
save that tangent for another day.
Right, yes. I am looking at a player for the Arizona Cardinals. He started in his career 10 games. He was mainly used as a running back. In fact, he was entirely a running back. He ran during his career for 670 yards on 188 attempts. In this game, he carried the ball 11 times for 22 yards. So he was the only ineffective Arizona Cardinal rusher. Even Kevin Cobb had 66 yards rushing. I am not making that up.
That seems made up.
Yeah, it's not. So this player who has a very Halloween-themed name in some regards is, in fact, the player who in this game had 11 carries for 22 yards for Arizona. Do you have any guesses, Scott? And you can feel free to vary if you think I'm lying about the Halloween-themed name to come up with another name altogether.
So it's interesting that you mentioned the Halloween theme because I think it's a little bit deceiving because, I mean, Halloween means a lot of things to a lot of people. I could see how you could get red from the Halloween theme because red, you know, it's obviously not a typical Halloween color, but, you know, red blood, you know, obviously something that you kind of associate with Halloween and that kind of thing. So that, you know, that hint helped me get over the line. And that's what I think. That's why I was thinking that John Comyn, the third Lord of Badenoch and Lord of Lochabar, also simply known as the Red Comyn, who died, you know, again, technically he died in 1306, but yes, he was that Arizona Cardinals running back that Sunday. What was it? 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
3 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. So it's you know, funny that he came back from the dead, but that's not Halloween ghoulish. I don't know what is.
Yep, that is in fact the answer. So congratulations to Scott for a brilliant answer. And I also want to call out someone who also had a similar Halloween theme name and did almost exactly the same thing for the Arizona Cardinals during this time period, and that was Lerod Stevens Howling.
Howling.
That's hyphenated, by the way. Stevens Howling. And why I didn't want to give this away earlier is I was talking about how, you know, because we have such a big European fan base, one of my favorite awful movies is The Howling 2, starring Sybil Danning and a bunch of people you've never heard of, except for, of course, Christopher Lee, who is contractually obligated to appear in every horror movie ever made between 1975 and 1988. So understood the late Christopher Lee had to be in this. The thing that was perhaps most amusing about this film is at the end of the film, the credits, they have a terrible band playing, which I can't even remember. It was like Babel was the name of the band playing the theme song. And during the end credits, they replay a scene, I believe it's 26 times, of lead actress Sybil Danning tearing off her top over and over again. And they literally do it 26 times. And she said she was, you know, so embarrassed years later when they noted that. You know,
that is terrible. I don't know.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. But Roger Ebert had a funny comment because in the original studio version, okay, in the end credits, they just show her ripping her top off in the scene two more times. And he said, you know, that her taking her top off in those last in the end credits gave the film its second and third interesting moments, because that was it was really just not a good film.
Okay.
But I enjoyed it. It was cheesy. Sybil Danning was.
So are we putting this above Ilsa the Nazi one or below?
You know, I haven't seen Ilsa though, so I think okay. Steven's gonna have to chime in on that one, because maybe true. Steven has seen both The Howling 2 and Ilsa, and he can
come back to us on that.
Yes,
just Steven, but please no screenshots and no links. Just
yes, please. We don't want to get banned.
Text only.
Like Deadspin. Exactly. Yeah, Deadspin, who had their Twitter account banned for about 24 hours. So moving up to this week, the all of a sudden nemesis Cincinnati Bengals, who've eaten the Bills twice in a row, I believe, who have, you know, really started off like gangbusters, to use a 1950s term, beating the Seattle Seahawks last week, going to 5-0, showing a great resilience. Andy Dalton playing like regular season Andy Dalton can often play. Graham playing like he always plays. AJ Green. Playing like he always does at wide receiver. This, I think, is going to be just an absolute huge challenge. I think it's going to be the biggest challenge besides Tom Brady that the Bills defense has faced.
Interesting.
I will. Okay. I mean, I'm going to, you know, I don't know what your thoughts on the game are.
I'm trying to think of the rest of the schedule, I guess. I mean, the Jets are 3-2. Offense. So, yeah.
The opponents the Bills have played so far.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you know, this was going to be a very tough game for the Bills if we were fully healthy, the way that Cincinnati's playing right now. Yeah. You know, there's, you know, you can go through the talent on the offense. You can go through the talent on the defense even. You know, Geno Atkins, someone who, you know, is kind of a little bit underrated in terms of his, you know, his ability to affect games, I think, because he's been injured, he's been on and off a couple of years, but when he's healthy, he's a top tier guy. Maybe not quite to the level of Marcel or Sue when Sue's playing well, but certainly like just a step below that. You know, you talk about Michael Johnson, who's a big kind of 6'7" athletic guy on the edge. Carlos Dunlap. You got Leon Hall, who, you know, didn't practice today. So maybe we'll see how he's feeling on Sunday. Adam Jones also, you know, Pac-Man, someone who can.
You called it. I was wondering if you're going to call him by the name. You did.
Yeah, I gotta. He'll always be Pac-Man to me. Drake Kirkpatrick is a good cornerback. He's someone who's going to be coming in, even if, you know, Hall's out. You know, there's just a lot of there's a lot of talent on this Bengals team, and when Dalton is playing like he is right now, they're tough to beat. You know, he is very good at getting the ball out quickly now. He's always been pretty good at decision making. He's never been like a huge gunslinger. He's had a little bit of problem with that in some cases, but I haven't seen a ton of it this year. And you know, right now, you know, other than in a couple dings here and there, they're hitting on all cylinders. So this is going to be a big test, especially I think. You know, like I was talking about before with Tyler Eifert, you know, we obviously had trouble with Gronkowski a little bit in the first game or the first Patriots game. Everyone has troubles with Gronkowski.
Right. To be fair, yeah.
I don't think Eifert's quite to his level, but it is definitely going to be concerning because we are, as we said, you know, going to be without Aaron Williams at safety. So that probably puts Corey Graham on him most closely. Corey's obviously a good player. That'll be a real key matchup for me going forward in this game. I think the other thing is it's, you know, again, it's just, you know, with that Cincinnati defensive line and the Bills offensive line, the way they are right now, you know, it'd be great to have Watkins and McCoy back, but unless the offensive line suddenly gets a lot better this week, I'm not sure it matters too much if they're playing, honestly.
Yeah. It's, and we were talking about Eifert, NFL.com had an article just a couple days ago about how Cam Chancellor had a rough game against Tyler Eifert.
Yeah.
That's Cam Chancellor. Yes. You know, how are the Bills going to fare against this guy when they've struggled, as you note, against tight ends before? Again, with the fair note that everyone struggles against Gronkowski. This is the biggest test for the defense, but if Taylor, and a lot of it depends on who plays on offense. If Taylor's out, and if, God forbid, LeSean and Carlos are out, and maybe Sammy, I think the defense is going to have to steal the game, and that's going to be no easy task against a team that's so powerful on offense, and they've been powerful on offense. I don't hesitate to use that term. They could blow it. They could suck for the next 11 weeks, but right now you look at them and think, wow, this team moves the ball. This team does what it has to do. This team overcomes its early game errors. I really expect this to be just, it's going to be the toughest test the Bills have had since the Patriots game, which says something because the Giants weren't that tough test and the Bills still blew that one at home. Can they afford to drop to 1-3 at home? So half their home games are over and they've only won one. Can they afford to fall 3-3 in the conference? There's a lot riding on this game where the Bills are surely, I believe, an underdog. I think it opened as even, but the Bills will be an underdog.
By the last thing I saw was Cincinnati by 3.5. So yeah, obviously that depends on, I think the odds makers have a lot of uncertainty at quarterback that they're trying to factor in, I think, a little too.
Right. So we'll find out. Predictions. I'll open with the predictions since I want Scott to kind of close this off here. I think the Bills and Scott and I both 4-1 with our predictions, patting ourselves on the back. I think the Bills will be ready for this game no matter who's out there. I think the defense will probably rise to the occasion. I really think Mario Williams is due to just have a consistent game beginning to end. I think they're going to start to grasp Rex Ryan's theme. I just think when I look at this game, I think that the Cincinnati offense has really moved the ball. The Bills offense is really going to be hamstrung in a lot of ways, even if they have players back, because I didn't want to say even if they're healthy, because they won't be healthy even if those players are back. Those are players recovering from injuries. Those are players who are not fully recovered from injuries and trying to get into the game. I think they're just they're too good for the Bills right now at this point in time is my thinking. The Bills certainly can win this game, but if I were a betting man, I would say the Bills do cover the spread, and I would say the Bengals are going to win this game 24-21.
Okay. All right. I agree. I mean, I think this is a very interesting game if you put it in a vacuum and everyone's at full health on both sides. I think the Bills would obviously have some advantages. I think our defense is a little stronger, but again, I think they'd have the advantage on the offensive line. And I think, AJ Green, a proven playmaker. I think Sammy can get to the AJ Green level, but I don't know that he's there right now. And he's certainly not obviously healthy. I think, Andy Dalton, I think is probably, in a vacuum, it's hard for me to say I'd really take Andy Dalton over Tyrod, because I think Andy is still limited in his physical capabilities. I think he does really,
but not against the Bills. He's never limited against the Bills. He's great games.
Torches us, but I still think I'd almost pick Tyrod. But again, I think this one, I think it comes down to the offensive lines. I think I will say that the way I'm reading the tea leaves a little bit, it seems like they're going to put Tyrod out there. I'm not sure that's the right decision. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, nor do I know what kind of sprain he has, but I think they're going to put him out there. I think he's going to be able to throw the ball, but I don't think he's going to be nearly as effective running it, and that's going to be a problem with his Cincinnati D-line. I think that there's going to be plenty of heat on Tyrod, and I think we're going to be in trouble. I could see this game actually getting a little out of hand. I could see the Bengals winning more along the lines of, I could see if we have a turnover problem or we're getting penalties problems, which again, we did okay with last week, but we didn't do this week. I could see this getting to the point of like 31-17 or something. Bengals. Right. I think it has that kind of potential, and I think it might end up going that way. I'm not convinced that it's going to destroy our season. I still think that there's a lot of green in front of this team, a lot of games against losing teams, frankly, teams that it can beat, like the Jets. And I still think we can get to the playoffs if we lose this game. But at the same time, it would have been, it's a shame to kind of have us in this position where it's not quite the battle of the Titans that it could be. But, it's the NFL. You're never really going to get that.
All right. I would be much more comfortable if we'd won the Giants game.
Yeah.
That would make me feel better right now. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll see how it plays out. So with that in mind, we assumed, of course, that we would be shorter with Frank not here. And, of course, we're at an hour and 10 minutes. So thank you to all those who listened. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, you know, on our website through Gmail. It's bbillsmny. You type that in any of those mediums. You'll find us on iTunes as well. You can Google Buffalo Bills Podcast. We're the seventh one there. You can listen to some older episodes and admire just how terrible we were once before we've improved to this level of mediocrity. So we are now...
Remember to tweet us to your friends, share us, like us, give us 5 stars on iTunes. All those things help us grow our audience and get us to the point where we can start charging you people. Wait, no, we'll never do that. No, yes, we will. I don't know. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, if you guys were willing to pay for us, let us know, because then we're going to start charging you. I don't think that business strategy works, though. It didn't work for Napster. So with that in mind, Scott and I thank you for listening. Most importantly, congratulations again to Frank for the new addition to his family. Indeed. He'll be back on board in the near future. Until then, I'm Paul.
And I'm Scott.
And see you guys next week.